If you had 1,000,000 acres of beautiful land in Chile, complete with organic farming, hidden lodges, and hiking trails worth tens of millions of dollars, what would you do with it? Well, Christine McDivitt Tompkins, former CEO at Patagonia, and her husband Douglas Tompkins, the late founder of the North Face and Esprit clothing companies, just gave it away to the government of Chile. The president of Chile announced the creation of a national park system that spans 715 miles, 1,000,000 acres from the Tompkins, 9 million from the Chilean government, creating a park system three times the size of Yosemite and Yellowstone parks combined, about the size of Switzerland, actually. It's a gift 26 years in the making and a rare example of a public-private conservation effort, not without controversy. Christine McDivitt Tompkins now heads the Tompkins Conservation. She was at the Chilean announcement. Sadly, Doug Tompkins died in an accident in Patagonia in 2015. But when an eagle soared, everyone felt his spirit there. And Christine now joins us by Skype from Patagonia. Christine, welcome.
Thank you.
And I have to say, we were so sad when we heard of Doug's death in a kayaking accident, but in a place that he loved. And we thought at the time, the two of you were kind of a conservation marriage in heaven. But now this gift, when did it start? When did you both start this passion of buying up this land?
It all began in 1992 when Doug, after having sold his part of Esprit, decided to come to Chile, a place he'd been since the early 60s, and was really looking around and found what is Pumalin National Park. And that's how it got started. And ever since then, we were based wherever our projects took us. And like many things, when you start them, it's an organic process and you're not quite sure where you're going to end up. But in this case, it expanded quite a bit from any of our original expectations.
Well, but also initially, a lot of the locals weren't happy. I mean, this looked like a foreign land grab. We were trying to restore some of this land to its pristine nature, and that meant opposition to a big hydropower plan. Some thought you were taking land out of production. It could have been logged or sheep and cattle ranched. They thought you were eliminating jobs. Can you understand how somebody might feel about two Americans coming in and buying up land in another country?
Yes, I can. I think that anytime you are developing something that's new, and specifically we were foreigners, we were buying up significant tracts of land, and then we were, quote unquote, not doing anything with it. It did cause a lot of controversy in the first, say, 4 years. So that's one thing. And the other thing is we've certainly come to understand that wherever there's conservation, there's going to be a natural conflict with development. Even though my opinion is to say that we're taking land out of production, my response is no, we're changing what that land is producing. If we were buying the land, locking up the front gate and not allowing any sort of public access, that's one thing. But we're producing something that increases the level of employment for the same land area and has longevity built into it in terms of being an economic driver in the sense that they're national parks.
Well, because the hope is that this will really add to that sense of Patagonia in particular in Chile as a tourist destination, create jobs around that tourism while maintaining the glorious nature of this land. Talk about that. Why Patagonia? Why this area?
Well, Doug visited Patagonia with our friend and my former boss, Yvonne Chouinard, the owner of Patagonia Company, in 1968. And I think for both of them, the sense of open landscape, vastness, it's a sort of romantic and wild place. So I think all of us became enamored with the Patagonia region for all the reasons that when you visit are quite obvious.
Yeah. When you say that part of the work you're doing is restoring some of this land, what does that mean? It looks pretty pristine to my untrained eye.
I don't know what photographs you've seen, but the ones in Patagonia, I tell you, you're seeing it after having taken the livestock off for the last 14 years. In terms of the grasslands, basically, they're such large landscapes, you really are removing the livestock so that the degraded grasslands can slowly make their way back. And it doesn't mean they come back to their original richness. but they do begin to come back. And then what we call rewilding, the return of extirpated wildlife. In Argentina, jaguars, giant anteaters that belong there and haven't been there largely since the 1930s, regenerating new forests. Restoration means finding the baseline for the areas that we're committed to and bringing them back to their rightful evolutionary level.
Wonderful. And the government surprised you, it sounds like. The Chilean government surprised you with giving even more land towards this huge park system than you had expected. But do you trust the government? I mean, do you trust any government? You know, governments change hands. Here you've given 1 million acres, maybe a couple governments down the road, they decide a logging industry belongs here.
This is the million-dollar question that everybody asks us. My response is this. If you look at national park systems on a global basis, governments come and go, but by and large, there are some exceptions to this, but by and large, it's difficult to unwind a national park. And if I had to bet on what has the best chance for maintaining these protected areas long-term, I'm going to bet on the institutional protection of these lands. If you leave it in a foundation, for example, well, what's going to happen with that foundation? These are big parks. They're complex ecosystems. If you leave it in with your family, who knows what the necessities of even the next generation will be? So we have always believed, one, in the democratic nature of national parks, but also strategically, if you're investing large sums of money and your heart and your life into these things, you better be setting them up so that in 100, 200 years, you have the best chance of them being still in place.
By the way, this is the hope of our friend biologist Edward O. E. O. Wilson. He has the Half Earth Project, trying to reverse the current extinction crisis by putting about 50% of the planet in preserves. You just, you know, stepped that up quite a bit with this park. But you just mentioned that it's hard to unwind a public park. And as you know, there are some in the United States that are trying to do that are trying to turn some of the parklands in the U.S. over to oil industry and drilling concerns. What do you say to people who say, hey, buy the land here?
Well, I hope they do buy the land there. I'm obviously extremely discouraged by the rolling back of monuments in the United States. It's a terrible signal. To my knowledge, anyway, they have not begun to try to degazette national parks. There's a big difference between a monument, and I think legally, the rolling back on monuments may prove to have been an illegal move, but that has to go through the courts. But if you want to degazette a national park in the United States, it's not that easy. Listen, I think there are no sure bets in anyone's future, but we think that this is the best bet we can make.
Well, you remind us that this is what you're doing, and I think I got this right. This is kind of how the park system did start in the U.S. I mean, it was people donating lands.
Well, the original parks, such as Yellowstone, which was an effort in the era of Theodore Roosevelt Jr., I don't think there were any private lands involved in that, but there are many cases where that was the case, and certainly the Rockefeller family and their donations toward Grand Teton National Park, Acadia National Park, the list is quite long. So we're not the first ones to do this. We're standing in the shadows of those who went before us.
What a gift. Look, just as we let you go, just as you think about, maybe you're even looking out at Patagonia now or some of this landscape, you've said it has a kind of haunting soulfulness. And of course now, you know, your late husband is there, you know, having passed there. I mean, can you explain the pull of this area?
Oh, I think so much of how you feel about a landscape is the part of you that's truly indescribable. There is a kind of knowing, a kind of identification with certain landscapes that are undeniable but inexplicable. We work in temperate rainforest, down in the Patagonia grasslands, up in Argentina, These will be now 11 national parks that we've brought into being, and 13 million acres. And I just think each landscape speaks to us through a different voice, but it's no less powerful. It is the act of becoming involved in these areas that you've committed yourself to that also shapes your relationship with them. So I have a feeling if Doug were here, he would agree with me that each area that we've worked in, we develop a kind of love for them that is goes very deep.
Well, and one of the parks will be renamed for your late husband, Douglas Tompkins. Christine McDivitt Tompkins in Patagonia, thank you so much for telling us about it.
Thank you.